Hello again, everybody. Pete Redden here with Vapor Global Aviation and the way I taught it. Today, we're going to be talking about a preliminary report released by the NTSB, accident number Charlie Echo November 24 Lima Alpha 036. This occurred on November 9th, 2023, 9:30 local, and it was a Cessna 172 on a training flight out in the Denver, Colorado area. First off, I am not here to play armchair quarterback. I am here to extrude lessons learned for the general aviation community. For those of you who believe that I'm armchair quarterbacking, I'm not. For those of you who may think that I'm not a trained safety investigator or a trained safety specialist, I will tell you that I am. In my history, I've minored in safety in my college years, specifically aircraft accident investigation. I was a safety officer on an Air Force demonstration team. I was also a chief of safety of one of the largest installations, one of the largest DOD installations in the DOD system at Joint Base Charleston, which I was responsible for numerous operations a day, the safe operation of billions of dollars of equipment each and every day. I've been trained in accident investigation, and I want everyone to know that I am not armchair quarterbacking. I'm not placing fault. I just want to extrude the lessons learned as quickly as possible because this incident directly correlates to a weakness that I've seen on exams throughout my 4 years of being a DPE for the general aviation community. So first and foremost, they walked away. Well done on the flight instructor. Well done on the student pilot. I'm assuming that they were actual student pilot training for private pilot exam. It doesn't say what exactly certificate was being trained for, but well done on both of them to bring this troubled aircraft back to Earth in a manner in which they both walked away. Now we're gonna look back and learn some lessons of what could have been done better in the future for all of us. So first off, the accident flight, they started the engine and they noticed that the engine was running rough. Once they realized the engine was running rough, they shut down, they investigated for a cause, they looked at the alternator belt because the alternator wasn't charging the battery. They determined that there was nothing physically wrong from the outside looking at the engine, and they decided to get back in and restart the engine, and everything checked in the green per the NTSB preliminary report, meaning they started the engine, everything seemed normal now that it was done. For those of us who've been around, Lycoming motors have a habit of having stuck valves. To someone who's not as experienced, not as prolific with all the external documents that go to the POH, this could often be overlooked in training, especially in high volume training flight schools where you're following a very specific course of action to get to the minimum requirements to minimally pass a FAA exam. So Lycoming engines have a known habit of having stuck valves. And in this case, in the end, it was found to be a stuck valve. But as of right now, they started the engine, everything ran good. They go out, they do the run up, and they take off. According to page 4-23 in the Cessna 172S model POH, it says that if the RPM at 600 runs smooth and smooth acceleration of the engine can be attained, that the aircraft is ready to fly. Obviously, on their first attempt, they didn't do this. And on their second attempt, it seemed like the aircraft magically fixed itself. We have to remember that aircraft don't magically fix themselves. If there is a problem, we need to shut down and investigate. We have to remember that as flight instructors, there are internal components to the engine that we cannot see that we must think through and go, what could the problem be? At high volume flight schools, they usually have large fleets. So this is a really good time to go, hey, maintenance, here's this airplane back, and we're either going to go to a spare aircraft or we're going to reschedule the flight for another day. There may have been some external pressures that we don't know about, but we'll leave that for the NTSB to figure out. So they go ahead and they take off, and they actually flew for quite a long time. The ADS-B data, it looks like they flew an entire sortie prior to the event occurring. They took off approximately 1539 Zulu, and at 1614, approximately 1614 was when they touched down off airport. So about 45 minutes-ish is what they were probably looking at. So almost a complete sortie. One last thing that maybe one last maneuver to cover before heading back to home base. So they took off. They did a complete sortie. By the ADS-B data, they did steep turns. They did slow flight. They probably, looks like they may have done some basic attitude instrument flying, potentially some navigation. And then they initiated a engine fire in flight simulated emergency. And this occurred somewhere between 12 and 2,200 feet AGL. In the report, it says it was initiated at 7,000 feet. It doesn't say whether it was MSL or AGL. According to the ADS-B data, they were never over 8,100 feet when they were flying 8,200 feet. And they were also flying underneath the Denver Class Bravo airspace, which was started at 10,000 feet. So they had some limited room here to work for that. So they initiated this somewhere between 2,200 and 1,200 feet AGL. I'm thinking by the ADS-B data, it was probably 2,200 feet AGL. So engine fire in flight. We know that on page 3-4, the POH, page 3-5, engine failure, engine fire, that if it's simulated, you have to accelerate to 100 knots to pretend to put out the fire. And then once the fire is out, you transition to a forced landing, a simulated forced landing. And so this all occurred, and they did the dive. You can see it in the ADS-B data. They did a dive at 100 knots, then they leveled off, and they proceeded with a simulated forced landing, which the student looks like they did a crossover of the field, a slight downwind, a slight base, a slight final into the field, and it looked like they were going to be successful with this simulated failure. And at 700 feet AGL, they initiated a go-around. They initiated the climb out, and at this point, the engine started to shake like it did on the initial startup. According to the NTSB, the RPMs began to drop. It looks like, according to the NTSB report, they stabilized at about 1900 RPM. And this is significant because this is not an engine failure, but this is a partial power scenario. And on page 3-6 of the Cessna 172S POH, there's a precautionary landing with engine power. So if you go into there, it says maintain 65 knots, put the flaps out to 20 degrees, and proceed to an airport or a place of landing, overfly that place of landing, and then land at that place of landing. So at 1900 RPM, my experience tells me that that is, you're able to sustain altitude and level flight, although not very fast. So I went into the performance section and I did some calculations. Basic calculations. So the stall speed at max gross weight of the 172S at 0 degrees of bank is 48 knots. At 30 degrees of bank, it's 52 knots. With 20 degrees of flaps, your stall speed at level flight, 0 degrees of bank, is 41.5 knots. And your 30 degree bank stall speed is 44.5 knots with 20 degrees of flaps. If you go to the cruise performance section, I used 6,000 feet and I extrapolated a little bit on a standard day because that's about where they were, between 6,000 and 8,000 feet. On a standard day, 1,900 RPM in a clean configuration should give you 64 knots indicated airspeed. So at 0 degrees of bank, using zero flaps, you're 16 knots to the positive of a stall. 30 degrees of bank with no flaps, you're 12 knots. If you go into the 20 degrees of flaps, you're now well over 20 knots, over 20 or just at 20 knots of stall protection using 20 degrees of flaps. I don't know if this checklist was run. The NTSB doesn't allude to it. This is a preliminary report, so I'm sure there's going to be more information to come about it, and I'm going to follow up with it when the final report comes out. But if you're at 1900 RPM and above, you should be able to get minimum of 64 knots, indicated airspeed, the precautionary landing with engine power says 65 knots with flaps 20, and you have stall protection. Yes, I know we're asking a lot of a potentially inexperienced flight instructor, to fly an airplane, or we're assuming it's an inexperienced instructor just because of the industry that we're currently in and the population of flight instructors that we currently have is relatively inexperienced. So we're asking a relatively inexperienced pilot to fly at 1900, 2000 RPM, maybe 2100 RPM, fly at 64 knots with approximately 12 to 20 knots of stall protection in this scenario and know that there is a precautionary landing with engine power checklist that they hopefully ran and moved through this correctly. So we have stall protection, we have the ability to maintain level flight, and we have a checklist that tells us fly over the field before landing when you have engine power, 65 knots and flaps 20. If we go to the ADS-B data, once this event occurred, the aircraft climbed no higher than 6,500 feet, and that was at 87 knots. They then slowed down to 66 knots as they proceeded to an airfield, and it looks like they were trying to enter on a 45 degree entry, and it looks like they overshot the airfield, or maybe they purposely flew over the airfield, which is something I would do to keep the airfield in sight right underneath us. They then proceeded outbound at 70 knots and then began to accelerate from 70 to 79 to 93 knots in a left-hand looping turn back to a right base to a final to the airport. According to the NTSB report, they were high and fast and were unable to land at the airport. Again, if we're following the precautionary landing with engine power, we should be at 65 knots, flaps 20, with that 1900 RPM or above that the NTSB said that they had. And we should be under a controlled, a disciplined descent or level flight, a stabilized position. So they did that. They were high and fast. They overflew the airport. And then they decided that they were going to land off airport, and they proceeded away from the airport, away from housing, towards an uninhibited area. Great job again. And they landed in a field, and unfortunately, they ended up in a ditch that damaged the airplane, but allowed them to walk away. Again, we all know that they did the best they can with what they had, and they did well because they walked away. So good job for the flight instructor. Good job for the student pilot, but we need to walk right away as a community and go, what are the lessons learned? And I think the big lessons learned here are know your checklists, know your performance. The airport that they were trying to land at was at 5,000 feet elevation. The airport that they normally fly out was at 5,600 foot of elevation. So that extra 600 feet, if you're not used to going to airports of different elevations, you might think that you're at a 5,600 foot elevation when you're really at 5,000 feet. So you have more potential energy to bleed off. Following our checklists, I would question why we did an engine fire in flight at 2,200 feet. Why not climb up? That's usually something that's going to happen at a normal cruise altitude. So somewhere 45, 65, 75, 8,500 feet above the ground. I understand they're already starting off at a high elevation, but the Cessna 172S model can usually make it easily to 10 or 12,000 feet. I've done exams out in Colorado. I've been that high, and the aircraft easily does that. Why did we do that simulated engine failure so low and not just, hey, your engine failed, as opposed to a simulated engine fire in flight? I probably would put the mark on that is a standard operating procedure for the flight school to teach it in that way, because they probably have examiners who teach it in that way. But the question is why at 2,200 feet would you push the nose over and accelerate to 100 knots so low to the ground? That one doesn't make sense to me. I would have done that at altitude, at a normal cruise altitude. So there was plenty of airspace to use, plenty of altitude to use to simulate that. We're always supposed to be in a position to land the aircraft. Whenever we do a simulated engine failure, whether you read the ACS or you read the airplane flying handbook, we do all of our slow flight training, our stalls, our steep spirals, all have to be at or above 1,500 feet. But for the emergency descent, there is no altitude limitation. I personally apply 1,500 feet to any kind of emergency descent. And I apply 500 to 1,000 feet for a go around on a simulated engine failure, depending on whether you're overpopulated area or non-populated area. So I threw a whole bunch of stuff at you really quick. I wanted to put this out here, get us thinking about what would you do as a flight instructor? What would you do as a pilot if you had a partial power scenario of 1,900, 2,000 RPM, where you had the ability to maintain flight at basically just above your final approach airspeed with about 12 to 20 knots of stall protection whether you're level flight or 30 degrees of bank, and how would you use that to your advantage to ensure that you landed on an airport versus off airport? Again, the airplane doesn't matter. What matters is that both of these people walked away, both these pilots walked away. They're going to fly another day. The insurance company is going to take the airplane and do whatever the insurance company is going to do it. That's why we carry insurance. But how could we think about this better in the future? The lessons learned as flight instructors, as pilots, and knowing our POH and our procedures. I think I have an excellent case study to draw from for future scenarios in exams that I give. I think this is something that we should be looking at. I see that it is a weakness in exams across the country, that we know the big emergencies, but we really don't know the other emergencies contained in Section 3 of our pilot operating handbooks. I hope you learned something. Expect a follow-up from this in the future. Again, not armchair quarterbacking. I just want to help the community learn in the future. These pilots did a great job. They walked away. They preserved life, and the airplane can be replaced. So well done to them. They made the best decision they could in the scenario given to them. They took chaos and they made it into logical order so they could make a safe landing and walk away and teach others about what they learned from their experience.